Welcome to the first episode of the Thursday Nights Retrospective podcast. This is a companion podcast to our actual play podcast. The intention is, so while the name of this episode is going to be episode 78 retrospective, or 77, what are we on now?
78, I think, right?
So this will be named the 78 retrospective. It is indeed our first retrospective podcast. It just happens to be after our 78th actual play podcast. So we have another podcast called Thursday Night's Actual Play, which is where we live broadcast and publish as an audio-only podcast us just playing our game. And we've decided to start this podcast to just do just more discussion about the game, discussion about what we've learned from playing, what I've learned from DMing, what the players learned, talk about what people have liked, the different experiments we've tried. I mean, almost never does a week go by that we don't try new things, so we will always have some insight into, you know, things we've tried. So today we have me, Greg, DM of Thursday Nights,
Eric Damon.
Eric and
Sam plays Hugh on Thursday Nights.
Kaylin, player of Aurora, Super Dwarf.
And the four of us are just going to sit here and talk. So it being the first one, I think we'll just sort of, we intend this to be very sort of a free-form discussion. We'll come up with a couple topics, and then we'll take questions from our live audience towards the tail end of this. So we're starting here at 11:10, so I'll try to keep it somewhat structured, because we do want this to be somewhere between 30 and 60 minutes. I think we'll play it by ear to see what we like. So let's just throw out some ideas for what you, if there's anything that you guys want to discuss specifically about maybe recent things. It being our first podcast, any topic is really up for discussion. I mean, we could even talk about the very basics, our how we got to, how much role playing we do. But I mean, go around. I do want to talk about my change in how I'm doing Treasure in Epic 2.
Yeah, I put that there. I would love to address a significant amount of things to this session, so we can start the habit of talking about this session. You know, I think the one of the ideas that led to this, other than Greg and I talked about doing something a long time ago, was the fact that a lot of us just hang around after the session to talk about the session and talk about what's going on. And there's just been so many good and fun conversations from that we're kind of like, why don't we just record some of this stuff? Yeah. We're all here, we're all doing it. So
that's the intention. We want to make this podcast such that people who don't listen to the actual play can still follow what we're doing, get some insight into how to improve their own games and such. But we will also be talking about stuff that happened in our sessions. So we'll try to strike a balance between people that don't listen to the actual play and people that do. So you want to just kind of talk about the session. Sam, is there anything specific that you are interested in? I'm writing things down.
Nothing comes to mind at the moment, but I'm sure I'll come up with something in a minute here.
Do you want to look at agenda? I have a couple of topics, things I wanted to mention. Do you want me to...
Still writing up here, sorry.
That's cool. Do you want me to, like... I have some things that I'm going to mention, but...
That's what I asked, is tell me the topics you want. I'm just going to pick, like, two of them.
Sure. Well, I mean, I think it's definitely worth calling to attention the amount of damage we did for the few amount of rounds we did. I mean, that's just... I mean, not just for pump up, but just in terms of kind of like our group working together.
Yeah, just give me the topics and then we'll go
vulnerable,
back to
vulnerable versus resist. That was a rule that we came up with. I had never even thought about. I think more use of complex terrain, and I want to talk about interacting with NPCs. Kind of an effect.
All right, you've basically given three podcasts worth of stuff. We'll see what we can get to. Some of those I like.
Throw things out there.
I second the NPC subject. I think that's a really interesting part of roleplay that can be overlooked.
So, first we're going to talk about the treasure thing. Mm-hmm. Kind of want to get you guys' feedback on it. So, what I did this week, what I've kind of introduced to the group, I ran this across the Something Awful Dungeons & Dragons thread, and I had talked to Eric about it before, trying to get what people thought about it. And the idea I had was, here in Epic Tier, our players, they're basically kings and queens of their own nation. Their airship is their own nation. You guys are so powerful that it's become harder and harder for me as we went through Paragon Tier, because we're now in the beginning of Epic, to justify giving out magic treasure in the very traditional dungeon crawly way. The epitome of that was when you guys had faced Arath's champion, and when you looted his house, he had 3 sets of magical shoes. And it was so ridiculous.
The guy had a fabulous collection.
The guy had clearly a shoe collection. Because that was an asshole of a violin. Because we used the wishlist system. So that was what made the most sense to give you guys, but it was just, it's so weird trying to fit it in flavorfully, how you are just like at your power level doing this. And now that you guys can teleport anywhere in all of the planes, and you've got this airship that can teleport, and you're so powerful that it doesn't really make sense to be killing a dude, and you're like, oh, look, he's got a ring that is more powerful than anything we have.
There's a reason why there's not a lot of pirates and treasure hunters around, and more people that work a 9-to-5 day job. Just in terms of resource distribution, it's about an economy more than it is about, like, trying to strike it rich and get lucky and, you know, rob from people.
So that's why I decided to try going with this new philosophy of how to do the treasure parcels.
We never run.
Which is, so the idea is that instead of giving out treasure, instead of giving out the items mainly and the gold, it is to take the value of the normal items that you would earn in the kind of theoretically game balanced treasure parcel system and just give you the full gold value. And it can be easily flavored as Thunderstrike, the nation, its successful trade routes, its da-da-da-da-da. We introduced it last week where you guys have a treasurer and he gives you reports of, like, we've made 10 million gold, and you basically just get that money to spend however you see fit. It does a couple things. My intention is that, first of all, it will make you feel like that you guys are above dungeon crawling. You know, that's, you don't need to dungeon crawl anymore. If you really need to go into even, maybe not an ancient dragon, but anything less than that, you could probably just send some Knights of Thunderstrike down there to go do it. You don't need to waste your own time with it. So it kind of does this whole thing that you're just kind of accumulating gold now. You're so rich that your money just makes money. And I hope that that feels satisfying. The second is giving you the role-playing opportunity of crafting the world's most powerful items. And I think that is cool because amidst the vast resources, there are a lot of cool things that... ways that you could flavor this stuff. You have different NPCs to do with it. And then finally, it also puts the onus of figuring out who should get the next big upgrade, who needs what to balance out the group, on you guys.
Yeah.
It's previously been on me, and I had this complicated spreadsheet of who's got items less most frequently and the total gold value of everyone's items. And really, you guys are far more...
aware.
You guys are far more aware of what you have and what the group needs.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to remember, like, was it Sam who kept complaining about not hitting enough? Is he the one that's got a weapon that's 1+2 low? Or was that Brandis? Or was that Dan? Does Dan care? Does Dan rather want this? What would you want
too.
More?
Like, people,
you guys
really
are far more aware of it. You're going to be able to do it. It's also going to make you excited to go through the items. My only concern, this is mainly what I want you to answer, is the whole kind of Diablo... or World of Warcraft style, like, you kill a guy, and you're crossing your fingers that maybe that Ring of Levitation that I really want is going to drop. Thing can be a fun anticipation, and certainly that's part of the game for some people. And I was concerned about if I mostly take that away, where you're just kind of getting the items you want by spending gold, does it remove some of the enjoyment, that anticipation of that sort of thing? And I have rambled on enough.
You've said this.
So my first take on it is... I kind of like the idea that we're accumulating funds from our massive trade and powerful resources that way, because it would kind of make sense. It wouldn't make sense not to be getting something from it at this level, flavor-wise and story-wise. But at the same time, I do kind of like the idea that maybe on the material plane, as we're running around, like, there's probably not a lot of dragon hordes that are probably worth a lot more. But I would still like it if there was something like, we're in the realms of Kanya, and maybe not dropping, like, oh, when he dropped the +5 sword you've been wanting. Maybe he drops, like, a treasure trove of stuff that's just, you know, it's pretty significant. Maybe it's more than we would normally get. So, I don't know. I still like the idea of being able to get something, just because, you know, you loot the Demon Lord's thing and get nothing of significance.
He was the guy that always...
So you really do like getting the loot from a big kill.
Not necessarily the specific item, though. It could just be... I still like the idea of having most of your stuff be crafted, where the things you're getting are not namely, oh yeah, and here's the sword you wanted. It's
but
more
it's
of...
valuable resources.
You get resources that you then use to craft the things you want. Because it is odd that you would find and the next 30 treasure things are specifically tailored to your group.
Right.
That's too weird.
What about, I mean, I know Hugh is, like, a character. It's always, like, looking for, like, kind of ingenious solutions to problems. So would you be interested in, like, a smattering of things that aren't necessarily, like, super powerful, but things that might be used in, like, future encounters or future situations? Like, if we're innovative or creative enough, we can see that these things that were dropped can be used in this situation. So kind of like, it's almost like leaving behind a puzzle pieces for us to put together if we want. Not crucial, but, like, could end up being a kind of a little bit of a sub-game type thing. Are you looking for that kind of thing? Like, because, like, the Dust of Disenchantment, kind of like your little tool, I see them along the lines as those, kind of like puzzle pieces that we can try to plug in different places, but not necessarily things that, like, are crucial to our character's mechanics. Is that the kind of thing you're talking about, or are you talking about, like, weapons?
Some of it's just satisfying to kill a guy and get some loot. It was an irritation that I personally had back in... You ever play Final Fantasy VIII?
Not that specific
no.
one.
No.
That's with
the loot the was done similar. You could go slaughter a million enemies and you wouldn't get a single coin worth of stuff. You got, like, coin base of, and here's your allowance. And it shows up every so many, like, checkpoints in-game. And that got a little bit, I don't know, just because it's like, well, I just slaughtered it, you know, a million dudes who didn't have anything on them.
Yeah. So you really do like the reward, the monetary reward of killing something. It doesn't need to have the items, but... the valuable stuff. Oh, because you're in the elemental chaos and you killed, maybe not in this particular fight, but, you know, you killed some big prominent dude and he's got stuff. He's got these crazy rare things that only exist in the elemental chaos, and you can go back and turn it into things, and again, it gives you fodder for role-playing, crafting items.
Just because, I mean, loot, to some degree, it makes sense to the story for there to be something that he had, which you can then go... and get money from. So maybe a balance between the two of, like, and this is the money that you're pulling in from your trade deals, and this is the money that you're pulling in from that. But a lot of the tailored loot does kind of seem strange. Where it's like, and here's the stuff off your wish list that you wanted.
Right. Fancy that.
You could just do, and here's a random magical item, which may be useful or maybe not, and then it's up to you guys to disenchant the thing and use the value to go make something you actually do want. Which is kind of fun as well. I don't know. Different styles.
My problem with the disenchant thing was always that they had it where it was only 1/5 value. Now it's 50% value for most items.
Yeah.
But it's still that me being always thinking about the game balance and the design, you're getting shortchanged if you just enchant it, because you're getting half the gold value. You're converting all your items into half the gold value of the items if you disenchant it all and buy your own. And that could, because the system is balanced... to require you to have the up-to-date magic armors and weapons, if you were to do that with every single item you got, you could get to a point where you're just not as powerful as the game balance.
So
designed for you to have.
Yeah, so rather than that, just balance it like, and here's material. Go make stuff out of it. That's kind of like that idea.
I think crafting resources can be pretty amazing if you flavor it correctly, and if you apply it in a way that actually makes sense for maybe even specific items that you want to make later. You know, kind of hint at its usage. Something you mentioned about finding objects that aren't specifically on your wish list but are still kind of cool. I'm thinking of things like the Exodus knife and the basket of endless provisions and the gourd of water that we got.
Yeah, wondrous items are always kind
wondrous
of cool to get.
Wondrous items
just loot.
Are great for
That's
loot.
A good point. I hadn't thought of that, because those are really memorable items that you've used. They're not really going to go on
water
the wish list.
Isn't even an item.
Yeah, like, no one's going to put basket of endless provisions, because who tracks food in your things, unless you got a specifically themed, like, apocalyptic thing. Mm-hmm. So, which we frankly do right now, but still,
that
is a really good point. That is actually something I'll consider, because I hadn't thought of that.
Plus it gives an avenue for you as well, if you want to make items.
Yeah.
Because wondrous items probably the easiest non-broken way just to add interesting things
to the
game.
Yeah, because they're usually out of combat
adds flavor
things.
Or, like, little puzzly type kind of, like, interactions.
That's a good point.
Yeah. The Exodus knife's one of my favorites.
For me, I'm a little bit of a different persuasion. I really don't care that much about ever getting drops. I'm always trying to... I enjoy the mechanical aspect of D&D. I really do. Greg always jokes about how much I'm on the character builder. But I really am always trying to cram as much, like, cool story stuff as I can into the session. So it leads a little bit into the NPC kind of conversation about how to get more story stuff involved. For me, I think to kind of... it's to have like stories behind the items is a very cool thing. It's a fun thing. It's like classic D&D, and I want to be able to do more. Yeah. I think
well,
though, to have
artifacts and such and big prominent things, divine boons, will still certainly be handed out when it's appropriate to the story. I should mention.
Totally.
I mean, there will
still be
things that are key parts of the plot that, you know, are items, quote unquote.
Absolutely.
And I'll probably set aside some of the parcel values.
And I think definitely everyone needs to be involved, and to have the DM still doing big item stories is great. But to have it's so many items and things to handle for the DM that like things kind of just get lost in the wash. And an item that will be very special to me is just another one of the many things that Greg has to distribute. So it's harder for you to be invested in a story. Whereas if I'm crafting something, I can really decide how I want it to come forth. And I can decide how I want it to kind of be used and described. And just like our powers come forth a lot of flavor, you know, I think that crafting our own items will allow us for our items to come forth with similar amount of story content. So
can I ask
I'm
you
all
a
about
question
it.
About that?
Sure.
Since you seem like you have a really firm grasp of how you like to roleplay creation of items.
Yeah.
Or
arrival of items.
Well, yeah, the way that you get it. A feeling that I've had and a concern about the new method of just kind of the items pop out of thin air in Thunderstrike.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned you wanted us to roleplay that, but I'm not quite sure how we do that without really bogging down the time. You know, so-and-so makes this, so-and-so makes this.
Can you stop doing that?
Oh, sorry. I know you're pointing at it.
So, like, how would you suggest kind of
I mean,
for a character to really feel like they are crafting that, but without absorbing so much gameplay.
Yeah. I mean, I think the fact that we have a 10-year arc now leaves gasps of breath in between important events, which I think is important to take into advantage. I know that's the thing. We over the 10-year time period, we had really important things going on, and even though we have a more important focus now, I think we're trying to put more breaths of kind of like downtime in between things. So hopefully that will give us time to role-play and account for the other things we have going on in our lives, other relationships and responsibilities, and some of these other kind of, like, items that need to be made. I mean, a lot of the item upgrades haven't been, like, finds or kind of creations. Like, you know, Damon's Elemental Sword is just kind of the story of it absorbing and coming into contact with new and more powerful elemental sources and kind of growing in that way. So
that's kind of a long-term thing, too. It seems like
it is.
That progressively. But
what about
something more like when you're talking about where we're getting parcels through
and you wanna,
Thunderstrike.
And you want to create something new.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could do something on the level of like a nation presents you a gift.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, you're...
So crafting is more of an abstraction.
I mean, crafting is totally...
Yeah, when I say crafting, I don't really mean it has to be enchanting it.
I was under the impression that we're like... doing that. Okay.
It could be, or you could it, be it some could, other story method of how you acquired it.
Acquisition is a great thing.
Yeah, Damon and Aurora had their little, like,
I might steal that idea, if you don't mind.
I don't mind at all. It's, you know, we had our little week-long adventure where we tracked something down. It turned out to be Hugh's armor. You know, Damon was allergic to it, and no one would forget. And so, there's a lot of ways for things that arrive at our doorstep.
Okay.
I mean, one of the most memorable kind of things that for when we got items was when it was a little kind of side adventure. We were coming back from the Critter's Mines the first time, and we got involved with that elven community. We killed a dragon. She gave us all kind of some boons. We didn't find it at the dragon cave. And like there was even like a little thing where like some elven kid shows up with a bow that like knocked him out of the sky, and that ended up being Damwin's bow enchantment for a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you know, gifts, things that you kind of actively go to find. Say the last thing real quick.
Yeah.
As we find new places, new ingredients become available. Like, a lot of people haven't been to the chaos, even though Damon has, so Aurora might see the rock and be like, oh, I've never come in contact with this. That gives me a new idea. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that does bring up, is the last thing I want to say on this topic, but another way that you could flavor getting an item is certainly if you want to find an item after a fight, as long as you guys just deduct from the treasury in the background that, okay, you know, I'm spending 10 million gold to get level 25 item. I already discussed with the group that you're going to get that. You could flavor it into getting it in the combat. I mean, there's no reason you couldn't, like, the bow thing with the elf that Damon got. That made a cool story. If you see an opportunity in combat or after combat, you're like, hey, this would actually be really awesome if this was a thing that is in the elemental chaos because of this reason. I got a really cool story. Just tell it, and now you have it. Yeah. I don't mind. You can't do it in the middle of combat. You're like, well, this guy's vulnerable to radiant. Hey, look, I found a radiant sword. But but in between combats, sure, I don't care. I mean, you know that we're really loosey-goosey on, you know, as long as it's between combats, if you completely respec your character, we don't really care. The point is to have fun and to keep it a balanced game. And you guys aren't abusing it where you're respecing your character for the types of monsters you're fighting. You're just making it stay fun. So, And that's fine. So yeah, there. When I say craft, you get it. It can be in any way.
As long as I get surprised every once in a while.
I just wanted to bring the whole thing. So the whole like receiving loot from monsters, I was thinking a little more on kind of like a dungeon master's point of view. There's sort of the this is the budget you guys are getting for your stuff.
Yeah.
And so it wouldn't even have to be specific. Just like okay, instead of getting say it's 300K, instead of just getting 300K allowance, like. From your trade sources every month, you get 200K, and then you're going to get 100K from a monster you find.
Yeah, certainly.
That's it.
And that's what you were saying, you want to get some of the gold from that, and I completely understand that.
Mechanically, it makes no difference, like this guy gave you that amount of money. So just so you get the story-wise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you get something. You get resources in both ways. And then the wondrous item thing was a really good point as well I'll definitely keep.
They're so important, and you can even make up your own as long as you're good at balancing. I mean, who's to say that a player can't come up with it?
Yeah.
Talk to the DM, kind of out of the session, and work on balancing it. It can be really cool.
Right. So let's move on to another topic. The one I think it looks most interesting for now is Eric had mentioned interacting with NPCs. Now that's a pretty damn general topic.
It was real general. I had something specific in mind.
Kalen also liked that idea, so why don't you go ahead and just kind of open it up with what you were thinking.
Yeah, it was a little bit related kind of what I was talking about weapon stories. We have a lot of cool NPCs, and I know it was something that came to my attention a little bit when we had like our big NPC tournament, which was an awesome tournament. We have so many great stories out there and the great NPCs, and I... oftentimes during the session, like, oh man, I want to interact with this NPC or do something with that or flesh it out. But just for continuity of story and just the time budget we're against, there's not a lot of time. And there's always going and writing something, which is fun. I need to do some more writing, and I have a lot of writing ideas. But I love to be able to talk it out and do things verbally. And I want sometimes to have. To have blocks of time to kind of to flesh out NPC interactions or PC and PC interactions, and we used to do like a little group therapy before, which was fun. We could check in on each other, but it's a part of me like wants a certain amount of time to kind of cover like downtime interactions, and you know I don't want it to feel like it's super broken or super sad, but I mean in my boundless hunger for increased depth and breadth of story, I just I want to find a way to interact more with NPCs. As feasible or not it is.
That is... Well, that is a fine thing to want. I completely encourage that.
I do too.
It puts a burden on me, because, man, I have so many NPCs, and you know that I'm terrible.
Burden.
I'm terrible with voices, and I'll forget.
No, you're great.
Better than any of us, for sure. I don't even do a damn in voice.
All right. I've gotten better
like
at
this.
My voices over the past 3 years.
The voice was so good.
But, so...
The growl
so
bile.
Is it that you don't feel that there's enough... You just, you don't, right now, you don't want to, like,
it's
you don't want to waste, quote-unquote, waste time kind of just doing a little interaction between Daemon and someone on the ship?
Well,
or is
it
that
two things.
You kind of feel like it would... go ahead.
It could be one of two things. It could be that I don't have a good way of... interjecting and saying like, "Hey, let's do a quick thing." Like, I don't want to interrupt. Like, people get into a flow and we're going, and I don't have a way of like holding up a red flag and being like, "Let's stop. I want to say something." Part of it is not knowing how to interrupt that well, and part of it is not wanting to interrupt too. Like, we get into a flow, and I'm like, "God, like, I want to do a thing with Blackwood." Like, Blackwood helped us out big time last session, and like, Daemon was gonna do something where he takes one of the guards off of Blackwood, but leaves one guard, and I wanted to do a little thing, but there just wasn't time. We kind of had to move on. That's what I was gonna do, like, back at the Thunderstrike ship, but there wasn't a good break, so we moved on, and like, I felt like the flow of the story was going in a certain direction, so I just didn't know how to get in there. So that's a specific example, but I want to be able to... Yeah, I don't know. That's the thing. I don't know if it was like a good time to like identify like an NPC section, like a group therapy type thing to address some of those things. But like, I mean, I know it's not lost. I mean, in some ways, I feel like it's a little bit lost since like we have a session now in between. It's that thing that I wanted to touch on. But like, you know, I don't know. You can't do everything. I fully recognize you can't do everything. So
it's funny. You're describing a problem that almost seems, I got to imagine, that's the opposite issue that a lot of groups have, which is you're basically saying, we do too much role playing. You can't do even more role playing.
That's all I'm saying. That's really all I'm saying. There's so much role playing that just gets in the way of other role playing.
Our main story arc is so engaging. You don't have enough time for all these side quests.
Come on!
It really is pretty much what you're saying.
Why doesn't everyone have a 20-page backstory?
You're like, I don't want to spend this time role playing because it's going to take away from this time role playing this other thing.
The only thing I'm proposing is there may be a way to structure it and recognize, like, hey, we need a certain amount of time on what's moving forward and a certain amount of time dedicated to kind of, like, what's happening kind of on a more macro setting. I don't know, and I don't have, like, a great idea.
I kind of get the feeling of what he's saying, because there's sort of, there's the role-playing which is attached to the main quest. Here's us talking about how we're going to achieve this problem, how we're going to go about that. And there's role-playing, like, okay, you guys are in for the evening.
Right. Yeah, sometimes
you're just chatting and whatever.
And I gotta tell you, there have been times where you've done a thing. You'll start doing a little side role playing thing, and part of me goes, "Oh crap! They're gonna spend like half an hour doing a cool thing, and my time budget for what point I want them to get to in the story is gonna have to be pulled back now. Now I gotta find a new good cliffhanger spot, and you know, and it does have that problem.
And I don't,
and it's hardly a problem because it's more role playing, but
I realized we have to get on too, and that's why that's the thing. It was a conscious decision not to go for it. Like I was gonna say that Blackwood thing because I lost track of what you were doing. But then, like Greg was like, "Wait, hold on, she's right in the middle." I'm like, "Oh." So then I kind of clammed up, and then by the time we got going, I'm like, "Oh,
it's already too late.
I'm not gonna force this. Yeah. Like, let's go. We're going in a different direction."
I have a thought on that.
Part
on
of it is just a give and take, which is good, you know.
I totally agree with you. I think that NPCs are so fun. And even if they're not super fleshed out, when you do talk to them, it's an opportunity to flesh them out. It happens, whether or not Greg wants to.
It does.
I want to flesh them out. Yeah.
Stressful. A thought that I have...
Stressful.
Well, that's what you should... You know, and you do a really good job is you put the onus on the player to make these NPCs real. But what my thought is if... We really want to do that. If everyone kind of feels like that's a worthwhile goal, we should address it and formalize it in a way that gives you permission to kind of explore it.
One thing I can say, just a one-sentence interjection, Damon did a post that said you liked a lot. I did a while back where I just went down and said Damon's relationship with every single NPC out. And it brought out some points that people weren't really aware of. And it could even be like that. Like, on a weekly basis, I could just write one or two sentences like, I want... Blackwood and Damon to do this, or I want whatever, Frida and blah 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 to have this conversation or something. I can just put down a couple of NPC things that I would like to see happen and just give it to you and see if you can work it in. I don't know if that makes sense. But a lot of the ideas I have beforehand, so I don't know.
Happy Elf just said something in chat. He said, yeah, you guys should schedule in some downtime role-playing, preferably towards the start and ends of the session. And
downtime for characters or downtime for
It all of a sudden gave me the idea. What if we scheduled in that at the beginning of the session, even if it's the middle of combat, right? Even if we had to split combat between beginning and end, what if we say, let's do some
rewind.
Let's make sure we get like at least 5 minutes per person or maybe even more depending on what we feel that we need, and allow people to basically do a retroactive like. Here's a conversation that happened between Daemon and someone else, or Daemon and Aurora had this conversation. I mean, what it could feel a little forced and broken.
It depends on how you.
But
blend it
could be something also that the players can plan for during the week, which is, I mean, the best mechanical sessions that we have, I think, are when we have an idea like the tower defense thing. We had a week, even though we didn't like spend hours on it. You know, we had an idea of what was coming, it was kind of brewing in our minds, and we come back and we're ready with ideas. Being able to have like a kind of we know this is going to be there for us to spend time on it, because I love the improv amount of aspect of D&D, but sometimes it's just so you don't know what's going to happen. Like all of a sudden we're like in this ice place, it's impossible to prepare for. But like something like that, you know, think about it.
Well, how would you feel if you had a period of time that was kind of like labeled like it's this is in the meantime. And
meanwhile.
You have meanwhile. Yeah. Meanwhile,
you know,
dot
I,
dot dot is what it is.
I
and
like
then
it.
During that time, and maybe there's a time limit, maybe it's more, you know, this is you have about this much time to kind of fiddle
yeah.
around, and you've come up with ideas during the week, and you maybe chat with people before the session starts and say, this
yeah.
is what I'd like to do for meanwhile.
Yeah, I
yeah.
like I like the meanwhile.
I
maybe.
Do like that as well, just because a lot of the downtime role-playing is a lot of how the other aspects of the character get developed.
Yeah.
I mean, in combat and, like, and
that's
in, like,
subtleties
really like diplomatic things or in skill challenges, you get some
solving
of it,
problems,
but
right?
a lot of it's solving problems, and that explores one aspect of your character, but there's a whole bunch of other stuff that never
how
really gets touched
problems.
On,
That's
is, like, what are they, how do they interact in non-stressful social situations?
Yeah, it was so bomb the other day when you're like, what does Daniel's room look like? And I'm like...
and yes!
Normally you wouldn't, like, I wouldn't get a chance necessarily to put that in there, because that has nothing to do with solving the problems.
Yeah.
But I was really glad to be able to throw a little bit of that in there. And a lot of that is in the writing, has been in the writing, but yeah.
And someone brings up an excellent point, is that movies do this, movies and books and everything do exactly this all the time. They'll be in the middle of talking about something, and then it'll quickly tell a story of what an interaction was like to help set a scene. And, you know, we're frankly really good at the role-playing part. We can make it work if we just
yeah.
make sure that
people know,
we just
people know it's an
time,
option.
Too.
Yeah.
People know it's an option that even in the middle of combat, I mean... I hate to suggest anything that makes combat take longer.
Sure.
Well,
so maybe I don't want to go that far. But
longer.
To
just
basically say, you know, Daemon had a conversation with Victor just last week, you know,
yeah.
about
yeah.
something, and then all of a sudden, not even just tell that as a story, but let's role play it. Flash, and just have Daemon said da 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 da, and then
I
respond, and it's a quick little scene.
That's cool because you don't have to say how they got there. All of a sudden, like. Daemon and Victor are sitting outside the kitchen while blah 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 scents blah 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 wafts from like the oven. Daemon comes out and blah blah blah, and then kind of like that, you can just set a whole stage, do it, and done. You're out.
If you really wanted to take that to the next level and really put the factors on the player to create more of the NPC, we could do something similar to what we did for the dream flashbacks for each character. We kind of had a little like.
Those are fun.
You remember the roleplay was kind of set up where it's a character and the players are playing the NPCs for that moment.
Yeah.
You have to trust a larger. It
yeah.
is, but you know, for a smaller thing, it's not going to be that big of a deal. It's not going to be a life changing.
I wouldn't write
experience.
A script for any of these things.
Right.
Yeah.
I wouldn't. Yeah.
It would be
simpler.
What's the word I'm thinking of?
Yeah, but if you wanted to set up a
something
quick scene,
like that,
something
so.
That takes 10 minutes, a really short thing,
mm-hmm.
where you're just like, hey, this is a thing that happened. I don't have to play all the characters that aren't Daemon, especially if it's
yeah.
Daemon interacting with multiple people, or Daemon wants to tell a story of something that happened on the Reductar, you know, his other ship. Maybe he's like, Sam, be this guy. He's kind of boisterous, and you just play it out real quick because
yeah.
you want to set
right.
the scene. That's something we should consider doing more often.
Yeah,
and
we'll
definitely think about that in the
well.
Meantime.
If you're worried about like time constraint things, you could say, okay, everybody's got like an RP coin, and any time during the session, you can blow your 5-minute RP coin, and here's a scene for a backstory or something. That's a little weird. It was an idea I had just a second ago.
Yeah, yeah.
There's merit to that. It's tough because you said if you feel there's a time constraint, we always feel
yeah,
there's
always
constraint
a time constraint.
At every single moment of playing D&D.
Dude.
Our biggest problem with D&D is that we can't be playing it all the time.
Well, we
that's
save
a huge problem. It's a disastrous problem.
We save so
calamity.
Much time with our sped up combat.
Although I
gotta
say, Greg works half the time but twice as hard.
So,
all like coaches and stuff.
I think that we can
involved.
Spend the time that we've saved speeding up combat wisely, and I think using it in this way might be a really perfect way to
I think
to
it'd
apply
be
it.
Really enjoyable. I think it would set the stage a lot of times for some
NPCs
of the major
rule.
Victories or
they
bigger
are,
defeats.
Awesome.
So yeah.
I mean, how cool is it that our NPCs are so intriguing that we want more time with them? I mean,
that
makes me feel really good.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we had the huge tournament. It was.
Oh,
totally
I'm actually
successful.
Really disappointed that this combat went as long as it did. I was hoping it would go 15 minutes shorter because the guy, man, I practiced the voice
oh.
for this guy.
I know, there was
now
some definite,
whole,
like...
I get a whole week, too.
He has some idioms
yeah.
there.
He dropped it off. I mean, we have some awesome...
That's why I forced it to fast forward a little bit to at least get his first sentence of dialogue because
that's always the best. Because then it's like, ooh, who is this guy? What is he all?
It also makes a good cliffhanger. So let's, you know, we've gone for half an hour now. So let's.
Because we rule.
You said you had something specific, Kellen. You said you had something specific about NPCs that you did want to bring up. Did you, that get covered in what we talked about?
I think we probably covered it. Yeah. Okay. It sounds about right.
So as I said, we don't really know what length we want to go for with these podcasts. It's been half an hour, so I think we could go to questions. Give that a good.
Yeah. If you want to shout out, if you want to shout out the vulnerable versus resist rule, if you want to put a little more just for people who are listening to for extra stuff, I thought it was a good rule. It doesn't come up all the time, but I don't know.
It's just that they stack. Yeah. They compete. So vulnerable 5 plus resist 10 equals resist 5.
Yeah, I think it's important to know it.
Yeah. But so let's go to. Let's go to questions from the audience. And Mike asked a question. I haven't actually read it, but someone said that is.
How many people do we have on right now?
We've got
hanging around
afterwards. We've got 32 people.
Aww,
so. Impressive.
Super fans.
It's about we lost about 20 people.
We few, we okay. Happy few.
So Mike says, all this talk of role playing has raised a question for you, Greg. You have players with various levels of experience, not only with the game but with role playing in general. And a lot of groups have a hard time getting into the role-playing aspect of the game. So as a DM, how do you get the group to feel comfortable enough to role-play and not let people get overshadowed by other players? Well, I think...
Ooh, I love this question.
I think that you guys are probably more qualified to answer that than me. Not Eric, because he is the overshadower. So how about...
Yes!
How about Sam
and the mic's all the way over there.
Well, Kaelin and Eric joined this group at the same time, back when 4th edition released. But Sam and Lincoln, who's not here, joined this group after we had already been playing for a full year. Mm-hmm. Lincoln was brand new to role-playing. Had never role-played at all before. Yeah. Sam was a veteran role-player.
But I'd already done more with the mechanics.
But had not done a lot of, like, as much flavor as we do in our group. So that was kind of new to you. Eric is a very loud and very kind of dominating presence at the table.
Extrovert.
If there's anyone that would be at risk of overshadowing other players, it would be Eric. Maybe you could elaborate on, has that been a problem for you? How was it like, especially when you were first starting, getting into it? Or was it more of an encouragement? I mean, yeah, just
tell them. Well, first of all, it helps if you're playing with a bunch of people who you actually are comfortable with and hanging out with. I think it would be a lot harder if you were not comfortable role-playing initially to go to, like, one of the encounters groups with a bunch of people who you don't really know and then just to jump into your character and, like, start acting. Because unless you're a really big improv person, that seems like that could be a challenge. But I think, for me anyway, it's a matter of... just getting to know your character well and coming up with sort of more backstory stuff and flavor for them. And eventually, once you kind of have an idea of your character and what the sort of person that they are, then role-playing becomes a little bit more easy because you think, okay, what would that character do? That's what I say he does. That's how he acts. And I've kind of admittedly come up with a character who's fairly low-key and...
I like him, though.
Yeah, I like you. So, I mean, he doesn't do a whole lot of the, you know, whatever stuff, and his mechanics are fairly martial. I could possibly do better. I've always had trouble figuring out, like, how do I translate 3 weapon damage into flavors? Is that 3 arrows, or is that a whole bunch of arrows, or whatever, all that kind
he
of stuff?
He has a distinct personality. You've definitely carved a character, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's
maybe not as flamboyant as Brandis, but still very present.
I do want to address that Mike did ask, as a DM, how do I deal with it? And I've got to say, in my experience, I haven't really. We did some tricks early on. No, that's not true. So we did some...
The 5-minute thing.
I was about to bring that up. So early on in our in our playing, especially when Lincoln and Sam were introduced, we did a thing that we called we didn't used to call it group therapy, but it was a we have a timer, an egg timer that's a 3-minute egg timer.
Go around
and what
circle.
We did was every once in a while, usually maybe twice per session, I would say, okay, what are your characters thinking?
Oh boy,
and we'd put the timer on for each person. Now the timer was not a time limit. It was actually a time
requirement.
It was 3 minutes, and it was basically you need to talk about what's going through your character's head. It was oftentimes before opening the door to possibly a big fight, or right after a big fight, or when any sort of thing that would normally be kind of emotionally impactful for humans or whatever
people,
entities, sentient beings in those situations.
Any other
and so we go around from person to person, just around the table, saying, "What is your character thinking?" And it would be like, "Oh, you know, this reminds him of the time he's a little anxious about this," and it did two major things. It helped everyone flesh out their characters because it forced them to think about what their character feels about the situation, and sometimes you'd have to make up something right there, and then that would become part of your character's past, and other people can bring it up later. So that really helped, and that...
I would say that definitely helped me a lot, actually. Quite a bit.
Yeah, so I imagine that is a pretty good
way... That helped me develop Hugh, so then it was easier to roleplay him in future things, so I had stuff already developed to pull from.
And then Eric's loud, boisterous roleplaying won't really interrupt it, because this is your turn.
Time.
You're talking about your character. This is not a conversation with Eric's character where there's that potential to kind of become intimidated by how much he's doing or how good he is at it, you know, which can also be intimidating when one player is just so good at improvising that and you kind of feel like you're playing yourself and not your character. But those personal, just what is your character thinking, really helped a lot to get everyone talking. And then we also had that plus one bonus in combat.
If I may expand on that.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah.
I'll bring that up since we're talking... Oh, go ahead.
Yeah,
go ahead,
yeah.
Cam.
Well, I think this is a really important thing because a lot of people talk about how they don't roleplay enough in their sessions and they really want to get into it. And some people don't consider themselves roleplayers in that way and they're more about the mechanics and the combat. And what you were saying, or just about to say... which I will talk about, is the idea that you kind of have to give them an incentive, a real mechanical incentive sometimes. Some players are just more into what does it get me? What's the actual benefit? And when you give them a little bonus, it's kind of like a little carrot on a stick, saying, here, if you roleplay this hit even really well, you can have some more damage, or you can have a higher chance to hit next time. And that can be the... you know, the little push that gets the ball rolling where suddenly they have reason to, and what happens, and what happened for us, I think, was that it started happening so often that bonus was, you know, started to kind of fade away, and it's almost like taking the training wheels off.
Yeah, so for people that don't know, what we did in our early play, in addition to the what's your character thinking around the table thing, it was also in combat. If this was back when we had hidden monster defenses, which we do differently now. But we had in combat, we would do a thing where basically, if you described your attack in a cinematic and cool way, I would provide an invisible plus one bonus to your attack. So basically, if you would normally miss the monster by one, I'd call it a hit instead of a miss. And so... what that did was it gave, especially power gamers who are really just in it for, they want to deal damage, they want to hit. They're going to want to do it every time because anything that makes their character stronger, they're going to want to do. So they're forced to say, you know, basically, if you say the words, I use Enfeebling Strike on the enemy, you don't get your bonus. Mm-hmm. But if you say, he takes his hammer and he swings it around and the divine magic flows into the enemy and causes his attacks to weaken somewhat. Boom. You get your invisible plus one bonus. You may have hit instead of missed. And I think that also worked. And as Kaelin mentioned, it just sort of phased away. We didn't need to do that anymore.
Because everyone got into the habit of doing it.
Everyone got into the habit of doing it anyway.
And then it would have just turned into power.
Well, you realize it's so awesome that way.
So
you realize
I want to move on.
It's so cinematic.
I
want to
say one last thing.
We're spending too much time on each question.
We're just being thorough.
I just want to bring an example as well. That happened in Kevin's description of Arath's Academy, which made the Academy amazing.
Because
he said, if you make an incredibly awesome description, if you creep me out, I'll give you a little action point thing, which was going to give some bonus later on.
Except it was supposed to be a penalty later on. Tricky, Kevin.
I don't remember. Oh, it was something, but it was enough to, like, we made that place creepy as fuck.
Desperate.
All right, what was the last thing you wanted to say?
The one thing I was going
to
say is, I think also, too, a DM can leave, breadcrumbs. After a couple sessions, you get an idea of what people like, be it things left on the battlefield, or children to take care of, or, like, Ren leaves. And you leave a scrap of paper with, like, an alphabet on it, and Ren's like, oh, something to read and study, like... Different characters love different things. If you walk into a bar and there's two guys who are arm wrestling, you better fucking believe Brandis is going to go over and start getting involved. If you leave like a scenario that's just kind of like set up for a person, that's going to invite them to get involved. So set them up. Set up your characters. Help them to like talk about
it. That's true.
So, we're going to go to the next question. I thought Happy Elf... Yeah, someone from Happy Elf that I really liked. He said, I have a question. Do you guys think it has been worth putting your game on the web in audio and video terms? What do you feel you've gained from doing so? And that is an excellent question that I've almost, surprisingly, never even considered. I have thought about what other people have gained from watching us.
Because I'm blessed you with our presence.
Yeah, by blessing everybody with the privilege to watch our game, we are bettering the world. But what have we gained from it? That's a damn good question, because I can honestly say we've gained a lot. I may have trouble articulating what it is we've gained.
Why don't you say what you got?
Well, I can certainly say that it does. I'm a very competitive person, someone who is definitely likes exhibition. In a competitive video game, I'm better if people are watching me than if people aren't, because that pressure to perform makes me perform better. Whereas some people, their nerves get shot and they do worse. I find myself, I do better.
Love
you
the crowd.
I'll play better against humans than I play against bots, because I'll try harder, for example. So I would say that there's been more pressure ever since we started broadcasting and recording for me to make the sessions even better, because I feel like I'm not just performing for the five of you, I'm performing for the thousands of people that download our podcast and the dozens of people that watch us live every week.
100,000 downloads.
1 billion downloads.
But that's a very personal thing, and that's not going to be the same for everybody. Some people could certainly run the risk of being very nervous and role-playing less because they're concerned that they're on camera. I've seen people tell us, you know, I could not play D&D on camera. You know, some people are embarrassed at the entire concept of playing the game.
Try it for
a
year.
I always think it's a shame.
And then
but, And some people they feel like they would constantly think about the camera, which is a risk we ran in the beginning.
You asked everyone if they were willing to do it.
But other than that, that's, that's a really damn hard question to answer.
I would say one of the big things is it adds a sense of legitimacy
to the game.
Just because, and sort of continuity to a degree, because it's a game of D&D, and one of the biggest things that happens to D&D groups is they fall apart. People quit coming, people stop going, all that kind of stuff. And so, if it's just, oh, that's my Tuesday game, oh, I can't make it, da-da-da. If it's Tuesday night game and we're making podcasts and broadcasting, not showing up has a slightly bigger effect.
Because everyone
will miss you.
And like, oh, and just the thing breaking up, not having a part anymore, it's kind of a bigger deal. Because it's like, oh, then the website has to get shut down, and we no more podcasts and no more broadcasts there. It's a bigger, it adds more momentum to
So you're saying it pressures you into playing the game.
No, I'm saying it makes it so, well, I would come regardless. I'm not going to be the guy who quits. Unless like something dramatic happens or something. But no, it would. I mean, I think it helps keep the game coming, despite other people's challenges and stuff they have in life. Maybe it would be a little more difficult to come. People are like, let's keep going anyway, just because they're already at. So that's a certain aspect of it, and I think it does. Unrelated to that, it helps. Well, I don't know. Initially, it kind of maybe want to play more. It maybe helps you want to speak more concisely and less rambling, but
less ums.
Sort of, but also being in the presence of other people does that too. I honestly, I would say, other than the occasional reminder, oh yeah, we're live, I forget we're actually broadcasting or being recorded. And that helps because I think if I focused on that too much, I would maybe get nervous. A little.
I know one thing that immediately popped into my head when asked this question is, we were just like every other group as far as tangents go. You could go on.
That's so true.
We stopped tangents almost immediately. It was a dramatic reduction.
Dude, I love Lincoln for so many reasons. He would always show up in D&D with like 18 different stories from the week, and it's so fun to listen to the guy talk and joke with him. But then like we just get carried away a lot.
Oh yeah,
and I know I'm calling out singly,
like
but like
does.
It wasn't bad. It was just we ended up talking for like an hour into the time that we were planning on playing sometimes. But he loves the game just as much as any one of us. So like,
I missed who you're talking about.
I was saying Lincoln. Initially, he would come with so many stories from the week, and we just end up talking and joking about so many things that we'd like go later and later just because talking about cool stories. But like I said, he loves the game just as much as anyone else. So once we started having a recording like go time, he was we just got kind of down to it, and he started showing up early to talk about all those things.
Uh huh. Yeah. Well, we still do it. We just don't do it while once people say that now everything's starting, things start, and we generally are really good about it. And people make comments about it, and I was thinking, why is that? And I think it is because we are kind of beholden to this audience, this amorphous thing that watches us.
Yeah.
It's a production. We have a certain expectation that we're putting on ourselves.
That reminds me of when we first started playing, we got a lot of comments from a lot of people when we first started broadcasting, specifically to me, how good I was at keeping the
grand DM
at keeping the group on task. Because in the early days, but you listen to those early podcasts, you'll hear me a lot of times saying, "Guys, get back on topic."
He's literally cracking
Let's
the
get
whip.
Back here
well, not
and
really,
cra- cracking the whip to get everyone to get back on topic. Now, I was noticing it today because I think one time I said "stay in character," that I almost never have to do that anymore, almost never. And I would say that's just probably an evolution of us playing for a long time, really getting into it. We really, as you were saying in the earlier discussion, is that we don't have enough time to roleplay all the things we want. And I think going off topic just happens less often because people are more excited about roleplaying the next thing. But in those early days, I would say that broadcasting was definitely a big factor for me cracking that whip, which was, I mean, I had done it before, but once we started recording, it was much more in the forefront of my mind that every time I went off topic, I was thinking, this is boring to listen to. And so I would say, this isn't what people want to listen to. And I do that. And even if it's kind of a weird thing, because I mean,
it's
board game night
weird.
Or role playing night, it's also a social
event
that's
yeah.
supposed to be. So you don't want it to be, no one's allowed to joke around or have fun, of course.
Because we do joke.
But we do manage to stay on topic. And I would say that broadcasting has helped that because it made me feel more pressure to keep everyone on task.
It makes the game the thing rather than just hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I will say...
which helps with everything else.
That I
The one quick thing.
Oh, sure.
Also, it does help on a weekly basis that when we have rules questions, when we're trying to figure out something, the chat... Because there's a whole bunch of rules savvy people in chat.
That's true.
We'll pretty much always get an answer from chat earlier than I can look it up in the book, which actually does help us almost on a weekly basis, which is kind of nice. It's a small benefit, but it's a benefit. I wouldn't say people should set up a whole streaming thing just to get
free
some
advice,
rules lawyers,
hotline.
But it's helped. Well, so what were you going to say? And then we'll move on to last question.
For me, it's a couple of things. I really love posting on the forum during the week and like listening to what or reading what people will post on the forum. But during the session, I've never had the computer in front of me. I haven't interacted a lot with the community, so I can't speak a lot to that. But I'll say definitely two things. For sure, the production level of kind of like the performing aspect of having an audience. I really try to pay more attention to my own kind of diction and pronunciation. As a baseline, I talk way too fast, and it's really hard to understand me. I listen to myself sometimes just for the hell of it on podcasts, kind of on Justin TV, and half the time I don't understand what I'm saying. So, like,
but you're gesturing
that's
so
just
much.
A reminder
really
to me.
Give
I
us
know.
Feedback on our forums if you have been able to understand anything Eric has said in this podcast.
Yeah, I know. If it's all gobbledygook, then you're probably average. So, that's been motivation for me to kind of like work on that, which is ongoing. But the second thing, which has been brought up, is I have a lot of friends who don't know anything about D&D and never play, and it started out being like a huge joke, and like then I mean it was a joke that I played D&D so regularly, and then it was like I'm going online, sign in, and people were like, what? Like one by one, they would all stop by, send texts, and then like after a couple more months, it was like it just kind of started to become more of a regular thing. So if you guys have anyone who you're interested in just exposing the game to, I mean, just you put a camera on anything you're passionate about, and people will just start to accept it more. So it's an odd thing. It's an odd thing. I never felt bad about it. Like, they were just razzing me, but it's funny that people kind of get online. And it's this funny thing that so many people that I know who have nothing to do with D&D have checked in on. Just like, hey, you're doing this thing. I'll come check you out. So
we're only going to do one more question because we're approaching our 1 hour mark here. I was saying 30 to 60 minutes. We're going
to
have trouble staying in 60. We could talk about this for hours, which means we'll be able to do this week after week. So, unfortunately, there are multiple questions that I wish we could get to.
Save your questions for next week.
We should start a forum under the podcast one says questions. You know?
Yeah, so
maybe we could do that. This is an excellent one, especially for our first week, because it's a nice and simple thing, which is, what are your suggestions for getting friends into D&D, people who have never played before?
Ropes.
Now, it would be nice if Lincoln were here, because he was brand new to role-playing altogether when we roped him in.
Peer pressure.
I don't have a good answer for that question. The worst thing about the overall design of any role-playing game, I can say this with confidence, every role-playing game, the worst part about the very genre is how hard it is to actually get to play it. You need a group of usually, depending on the system, three or more players.
Three, six,
they can meet on a regular basis, hopefully weekly, even if you're just trying to do monthly. They can meet up for hours, you know, usually at least 3 hours or more. And just getting that on a regular basis is extremely difficult. A lot of our viewers watch us because they can't play. They don't have a group. They haven't been able to get friends to play. We get so many people coming in saying, man, I played this back in college or I played this back in high school, but no one around me plays. And I'm overjoyed that we get to put something out there that at least gives people a little bit of that satisfaction. They can watch us play, they can listen to us play, and kind of play vicariously through us. I wish we would lose all our viewers because everyone went out and found a group and they were playing
on
Thursday
awesome. Night. That would be ideal, joyous, because my inspiration for starting this, besides being a self-centered person who wants everyone to watch him, even greater than that, is wanting to spread D&D to more people. And get more people interested in the game.
Yeah.
So, and Happy Elf does mention you can play online. You can play online with Map Tool.
Yeah.
I've done it. Something Awful. Check your if you are a part of a local gaming community, you can do that. But I kind of went way off tangent of the original question, which is how do you get your games? How do you get your friends to play the game? I don't know.
I mean,
just tell them to fucking come over to your house, and you're going to teach them to play.
Beer and
just
pizza.
Get beer and pizza, and just start rolling dice. Don't start teaching them the rules.
No,
I would say that's going to scare people away. All the role-playing games, they have pretty complicated rules. Just start with the very idea that, like, the way I learned, I remember someone's like, yeah, this is how you play the game. Look, you roll this die, and if you get this number, you hit the guy. Just make up, if you're really having trouble getting people into it, make up your own rules as you go along. Get your friend to come over, get him to roll a die, and you're saying you're fighting a goblin, he rolls a die, you hit the goblin and you killed him, and then you do this thing. And if he's like, hey, this is actually kind of cool, then start teaching them the rules. Get into a real game. I mean, I've never actually done this, so I'm just kind of throwing darts here, but...
I mean, you have done it.
So many people like rolling the dice is what's fun.
You introduced me to D&D. Like, I had never played before. I was at like one of these church overnight campout things that we did.
Keep dice on you at all times.
We just, I mean...
Basically.
Look, I think what Greg says is great about kind of getting someone... The idea of telling stories. There definitely are some indications of whether or not someone would be interested in the type of thing. It's a specific enough thing that there are definitely people that will surprise you that they're into it, but a lot of times if a guy's like really into reading or fiction, sci-fi, some sort of kind of like story that is often kind of present in these type of things, you can just, I mean, invite that guy to come do something like Greg says, and then honestly, just hand him a book too. That's the other thing I'd say. The books are really written well. They have a little bit of the lore in it. They have a little bit of kind of simpler rules. I mean, Wizards work so hard to like, that's what they do professionally.
Mm-hmm.
So like rely on their materials a little bit, find like the simplest book and just give it to them. Buy them as a gift. And if they're about it, they'll read through and they're going to be like, fuck,
what
I really
want
to play.
Yeah.
Like they'll start making play happening and they'll become maybe a watcher Thursday nights and then find friends and start doing it, you know?
I would say, if you like D&D, talk about it. Because sometimes it's just a matter of exposure. Because if your friends have never heard of D&D and they don't know what it is and you never talk about it, they will never be interested in playing it because they will never have actually heard of it.
Or they'll only know what the... You know, what the stigma is.
Yeah.
What people know about it, which is...
Because sometimes...
Totally backwards and...
People have heard weird things about it, and so there's like the, I used to play some games, or I'm into video games a little bit. But you don't talk about it because you're worried about being labeled as a nerd or something like that.
It's...
So, but if you actually talk about it, and you're enthusiastic about it, then people... You have to own it, essentially.
Right.
And so, if you own it, and you like it, and your friends realize that you are a normal, sane person, then maybe eventually after hearing you talk about it enough
times, they may be interested.
Yeah.
I have had the privilege of being able to talk about D&D to children who have never really worked with it. It's actually... And the same methods that I use to talk about it can be used with adults. You know, you just obviously talk to them like an adult.
Adults are D&D children.
They really are, and it's great. One thing is to know what the person is interested in. Some of the kids are really into the storytelling element. They want to make a character and just play that character. That's what they want to do. Others want to do amazing combat and kill monsters. So knowing what your friends are into with other games or what their hobbies are, approach it from that standpoint. If they're interested in combat, you can recount to them all the cool things you've done combat-wise, amazing things that your characters can do to take down monsters. If they're more into the stories, tell them the story. Say, wow, it was so amazing last night. This happened, and then this happened. And kind of tease them a little bit with that. And if they show interest, keep going. And they might even start asking, well, what happened this week? And then you can say, well, hey, if you ever want to come and watch, come and see what happens. Maybe you could even play an NPC. You know, it's a little bit, there's some seduction there. You don't, like, bury them in information immediately. Like you said, you'll scare them. You will scare them away. Just kind of, you know, invite them to dip their toe in the water and see where it goes from there.
So, we're definitely out of time. We're over an hour now. So, I'm going to...
We love you all. Play more D&D.
Cut it off here.
Thursday nights, the long-winded.
So, we definitely... we would love to get feedback on this new podcast we're doing. Go to Thursday Nights, that's with a K, .com, and click on forums. That's the best way to give us feedback in the podcast section. Or you can just email us at podcast@thursdaynights.com. We'd love to know, is it too long? Is it too short?
Is it how you use things?
Yeah. You know, we haven't done a sort of discussion podcast, despite having 77 actual play podcasts under our belt. Wow, 77, that's a lot.
78.
A lot.
You can say it too. I know we're trying to invite as many people as possible. If it seems like it's too many voices, just put that. We may keep them the same amount of people, but we want to know if it sounds like too many people are talking at the same time. I don't know.
I think we've been pretty good so far.
Anyway, any feedback, we'd love to hear it. And if you're interested in watching live play of Dungeons & Dragons, you can watch us every Thursday. You can become just search for Thursday Nights on Twitter or Facebook or go to ThursdayNights.com. All of those have notifications of when we are online, which is every Thursday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Currently, Pacific Observed Time. And thanks for tuning in.
Bye, you guys.
Thank you, folks.
Night.
Thank you for watching.
Broadcast going.
That's true.
Kevin McLeod.